Europe, now watch. Europe, now watch. I'd like to read to you an article which was published this morning, December 13, 2003. The European Union's effort to seal its first ever constitution collapsed Saturday, after leaders could not agree on the best way to divvy power once the bloc adds 10 new members next year. The key stumbling block was a proposal to scrap a complicated point system that was accepted in 2000 and gave Spain and newcomer Poland almost as many votes as Germany, which has twice as many people as either. Now let me explain what this is all about. In the year 2000, a treaty was made with Poland, guaranteeing Poland that they would have a certain voting power. But now, mainly Germany and France decided that that was no longer a good treaty and that that should be changed and that Germany and France should have more powers of vote in comparison to countries like Poland. Now, it is interesting, I watched a program last night on German television with the German Foreign Minister, Joschka Fischer. And he was asked, well, why did you guys even sign that contract in 2000 when you now feel it should be changed? And he answered, well, we had to do this in 2000 because if we hadn't done it, all further talks would have stopped right there and then. Now, let me continue reading from this article. It says, talks will be taken up again sometime after March of next year. At that time, Ireland will take over the EU presidency, and so they will preside over those talks. The article continues that Poland, the biggest of the 10 newcomers, along with Spain, objected to the proposed change, which was introduced by Germany and France mainly. The Spanish and the Poles insist the new system would entrench the power of the four EU heavyweights, which is Britain, France, Germany, and Italy. If it is not possible to agree, we shall wait, the Polish foreign minister says. We are talking about compromise or domination. Germany said the future of the EU was at stake, and the summit began well Friday, according to this article. Now listen to this. When leaders put aside their differences over the Constitution and agreed on a plan to boost the EU's military capability with or without NATO alliance. Now that was agreed. So they agreed that they will now, from now on, pursue militarily if even NATO won't do it. In some other articles, which I pulled from the webpage this morning, including some British articles and also some German articles, because this constitution talk collapsed, Europeans are now wondering what the next step is going to be. And so they say what we should do now is to go back to the original founding members, which is Germany, France, Italy, the Netherlands, Belgium, and Luxembourg. They have to come together, and they now will have to decide what is going to happen from now on in Europe. Now, let me read to you from an article which was published in Ireland this morning. French President Jacques Chirac was quoted as calling for smaller pioneer groups of countries to forge ahead with closer integration in defense, economic policy, and justice. This will provide an engine, an example that will allow Europe to go faster, further, and better, he says. German Chancellor Gerhard Schröder, his closest partner, took a similar line. If we don't manage in the foreseeable future to reach a consensus, then there will emerge a Europe of two speeds. That would be the logic of such a final failure. The article continues to say the breakdown capped a year in which Europeans were bitterly split over war in Iraq, EU budget rules were bent, Sweden voted against joining the euro, and Britain delayed indefinitely a referendum on the same issue. Now, the Italian Prime Minister Berlusconi declined to blame Spain and Poland, pointing instead at the tough positions of Germany, France, and Belgium. Now again, we need to point out that this failure happened because Poland, and of course Poland has obviously some memories when it comes to their own history, insisted that the agreement which had been made in 2000 should be upheld. As a matter of fact, the foreign minister of Poland said that contracts should be held and should be kept. That is the main principle of international relationships. Now, I don't know whether you caught this, but the talks are now going away from the 25 member states of Europe, which it's going to be in May, saying, well, of course, if we can work with the 25, let's go back to a smaller group, something which is very interesting in light of biblical prophecy, because as we will see in a moment, the Bible prophesies that there will be 10 nations or group of nations which will be running Europe, not 25. And I've been wondering anyway, when I thought about those 25 member states, how is this going to happen with the 10? Now, of course, there have been talks that they were saying, well, 25 is too big anyhow, so we need to have some core nations which will be running Europe within the 25, and that still may happen. But it may not happen that way at all. It may, as Chancellor Schroeder pointed out, be now a different development, where there is going to be a group in Europe out of the 25, so to speak, which will go full force ahead. Also, another article in Ireland published the reaction from Britain, and Tony Blair was saying that, of course, Britain was the most Eurosceptic public of any EU member state, went into the Brussels summit determined to defend its red lines, notably the right to veto EU initiatives on tax, social security, and foreign and defense policy. So he wasn't all that devastated by the fact it didn't work out. But it's interesting what the Conservatives had to say over there in England. Michael Ancram welcomes the failure in Brussels. It is a matter of belief that for the moment it is not going to be rammed down the throats of the British people, he said. We should be grateful towards the Poles and the Spaniards for standing up for their national interests in a way that our government was not prepared to do. He warned the European federalists will undoubtedly, however, have another go. We will continue to highlight the dangers and to insist on a referendum if this constitution is agreed to. Now, it's interesting that it's, of course, Britain again, which seems to be stepping away from the idea to unify Europe. And as we have said for so many years, Britain might not be in it when it comes to the final configuration. But I'd like to go back now to a scripture in the book of Daniel, chapter 2, to just refresh our memories as to what the Bible has to say about how Europe will ultimately look like. Because in this talk regarding a common constitution, we might perhaps lose sight of what ultimately is going to happen, and it might happen very soon, maybe now even sooner than if a constitution had been adopted. In Daniel chapter 2, of course, beginning in verse 31, we read about Nebuchadnezzar having had a dream in which he saw a statue, and he couldn't figure out what it meant. And so Daniel was asked to not only tell him the meaning of the dream, but also what he had dreamt. And so Daniel, in Daniel chapter 2, beginning in verse 31, is saying, you, O king, were watching, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose splendor was excellent, stood before you, and its form was awesome. This image's head was of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. Notice verse 34. You watched while a stone was cut out without hands. So this stone came without hands, human hands, that is, which struck the image on its feet, on its 10 toes of iron and clay, and broke them, those toes, in pieces. Let's continue reading in verse 40. And the fourth kingdom shall be as strong as iron, inasmuch as iron breaks in pieces and shatters everything, And like iron that crushes, that kingdom will break in pieces and crush all the others. This is the last kingdom, the Roman Empire, which would then be resurrected 10 times. And at the 10th resurrection, Christ would return. Verse 41. Whereas you saw the feet and toes, partially of potter's clay and partially of iron, the kingdom at that time then shall be divided. Yet the strength of iron shall be in it, just as you saw the iron mixed with ceramic clay. And as the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly fragile. And as you saw iron mixed with ceramic clay, they will mingle with the seed of men, perhaps through marriages, perhaps through other alliances. But they will not adhere to one another, just as iron doesn't mix with clay. This is talking about the final configuration of the European Empire, consisting of 10 nations or groups of nations. It goes on to say, and in the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. And the kingdom shall not be left to other people, and it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever, signified by that stone which came down without hands and destroyed the kingdom by smashing those 10 toes. Now let's turn to the book of Revelation chapter 17. Because here we get another information on those 10 toes. Who or what are they? Revelation 17, let's start reading at verse 12. Here these 10 toes are symbolized as 10 horns. But notice what it says about them. Those 10 horns, Revelation 17, verse 12, which you saw are 10 kings, or kingdoms, which have received, or who have received no kingdom as yet, but they receive authority for 1 hour, perhaps 3.5 years, if you look at Daniel 7, verse 25, as a parallel scripture. So they will receive authority for 1 hour as kings with the beast. Now, who and what is that beast? We'll talk about that in a moment. Verse 13, and these are of one mind. Now, when it comes to what's being talked about here, because we have already seen, you know, they are not always united, but here in this particular case, they are of one mind, and they will give their power. That's what they are of one mind about. And they will give their power and authority to the beast. So we have 10 kings or kingdoms or nations or groups of nations in Europe, which will at one time, when they have received their power, which at this point they haven't received yet, they will then give their power to this beast for a very short time, 1 hour, as the Bible says. Now recently Mr. Brett Mitchell sent me an article by Mr. Armstrong, which he had written in 1967. And I'd like to read from this article a few excerpts. He says in here, for 33 years I have been telling the radio audience and the readers of The Plain Truth that the final world disturbances and military battles of this age will center on the Middle East and on Jerusalem in particular. There will be a Jewish temple built in Jerusalem, with animal sacrifices once again being offered. For a long time, the Jewish people have had in mind the rebuilding of the temple, though they keep it pretty secret. And it must be built on the exact site of Solomon's temple. Turn to Matthew 24 and notice verse 14. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. His disciples had asked Jesus privately what would be the sign of his coming at the end of the world, of this age. He spoke of a definite, specific gospel, the very gospel he brought from God and taught his disciples. But that gospel was not preached to the world after 69 AD. But Jesus' prophecy of that time, the gospel being preached to the whole world, is being fulfilled by the World Tomorrow broadcast in the Plain Truth magazine, and I might add, it is still being fulfilled by the work of God's church today. He goes on to say, now notice the next verse immediately following, what is the next thing to happen in time order? When you therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet stand in the holy place. This holy place has to be in the temple in Jerusalem. Understand. Next to happen, verses 21 and 22, is a soon coming great tribulation. But I want you to understand what is meant by the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet. In Daniel 11, verse 21, that's where this term is used. That's what Christ is referring to. So he says in Daniel 11, verse 21, referring in original, typical fulfillment to Antiochus Epiphanes, there shall stand up a vile person that was in 168 B.C. Now notice verse 31 of Daniel 11, still speaking of Antiochus Epiphanes. An arm shall stand on his part, and they shall pollute the sanctuary of strength, speaking of the temple at Jerusalem, and shall take away the daily sacrifice, and they shall place the abomination that makes desolate. Now the article continues. What Antiochus placed there to defile the Holy of Holies in God's temple was a statue of Jupiter Olympus. The mercy seat of the Holy of Holies was the earthly representation of the very throne of God in heaven. So once again, before the second coming of Christ, a vile leader will stop the daily sacrifices being offered in the temple yet to be built in Jerusalem, and will profane the holy place with an idol. But that isn't all. The same prophecy spoken by Jesus is also reported by Luke in his gospel. Notice Luke 21, verses 20 to 24. And when you shall see Jerusalem compassed with armies, then know that the desolation thereof is near. Then let them which are in Judea flee to the mountains. He goes on to say the typical fulfillment of this occurred in 66 to 70 A.D. The Roman army under General Cestius was marching late October 66 A.D. toward Jerusalem. They became established inside of the gates of the city. But for some reason unknown, Cestius' army was pulled back. The Christians who heeded Jesus' warning fled to the hills of Judea and then northward east of the Jordan. It was the Roman army under Titus in 70 A.D. which actually invaded and destroyed Jerusalem. You see, there was a window of 4 years about, during which the Christians who were at that time living in Jerusalem could flee. He goes on to say, so now putting the two accounts of Jesus' Olivet prophecy together, Matthew 24 and Luke 21, two things are to occur just before the Great Tribulation. One, there will very soon be a temple in Jerusalem, with daily sacrifices once again being offered. But the ruler of the soon coming resurrected Holy Roman Empire, and now we are talking about the beast, a political military union of 10 European nations, notice this, 10 European nations, or we could say groups of nations, will stop the daily sacrifices and profane the holy place in the temple. And two, Jerusalem will be surrounded and captured by armies of the European Empire. They will invade Jerusalem and take charge of the temple. Now, these things will happen. Now, we don't know for sure whether a temple actually is going to be built. At one time, Mr. Armstrong felt very strongly, as he did at this time, that a temple would be built. Later on, he said, well, you know, of course, sacrifices don't have to be offered. You don't have to have a temple for the offering of sacrifices. But still, there are too many indications in the Bible which strongly imply that a temple will have to be built still. And so I would I would agree with what's being written here. Now he goes on to say, and this is something which I wanted to point out to you because this is something which I either had never focused on, or if I did, it had escaped my attention. So I'd like to go back to this now, because he goes on to say, continue further in the prophecy of Daniel 11. Pick it up as verse 40. It says, at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, which is the king of the north. Now the modern remnant of the king of the south of this prophecy is Ethiopia. Anciently, Egypt was a country of the king of the south, but few Egyptians remain in Egypt today. Arabs of a different original stock have generally replaced the real Egyptians. The people descended from those who were of ancient Egypt are the Ethiopians. And the Italians were the remnant and successors of the people of the king of the north at that time. Now that's important. At that time. He goes on to say, this prophecy, notice this, was fulfilled in February or March of 1896 when King Menelaus II of Ethiopia pushed at the Italians, defeating Italy at Alua. Italians thirsted for revenge. Finally, the opportunity came in 1935 under the military machine developed by Mussolini. Continue the prophecy, verse 40. And the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind in the air, with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships. And he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over. Notice, a whirlwind comes in the air. So did Mussolini's air forces. He sent down many ships, much cavalry and tanks, more than chariots. And his forces in planes passed over. Previously, victorious armies were describing as passing through, not over. Continue in verse 41. He shall enter also into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown. Now here's the important point. There is a time lapse between verse 40 and verse 41. After Mussolini captured Ethiopia, he added it to Libya, Eritrea, and Italian Somaliland. Mussolini had signed a concordance with the Vatican, publicly announced the rebirth of the Roman Empire with King Victor Emmanuel Emperor, and himself the Duce or Premier. Now this was the ninth resurrection of the Roman Empire. He goes on to say, but Mussolini's bubble of the Roman Empire was short-lived. Most people never actually noticed he had proclaimed its resurrected existence. But the final seventh head, or the tenth horn, is soon to rise. Soon there will be 10 European nations in a political military union that will shock and dumbfound the world. Verse 41 refers to that succession of the Roman power which became the king of the north in the prophecy of Daniel 11. So notice what this coming United States of Europe will do. Verse 44. But tidings out of the east and of the west, tidings out of the east and of the north, which is Russia, shall trouble him, and therefore he shall go forth with great fury to destroy and utterly to make away many. And he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain, which is Palestine. Yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help him. So this now forming European power will invade Palestine, and it will move its headquarters there. This European power will only last for a very short while. They will take the temple and will plant the palace of the headquarters there. Now I want to pause here, and then I have one more comment I want to make from this article. I'm going to pause here and point something out. Now, I had assumed, when you go to the scripture in Daniel 11, when it says the king of the south will push at the king of the north, that that still will have to happen. Now, Mr. Armstrong makes a very interesting point here. That might already have happened. That might not have to happen again. All which hasn't been fulfilled yet in this prophecy is verse 41, where the king of the north shall enter the glorious land. My point is, there doesn't have to be a king of the south any longer pushing again at the king of the north, if that has already been fulfilled in verse 40. Now, it might still have to happen, as another fulfillment, a dual fulfillment perhaps, but it doesn't have to be. That's the point I want to point out here. Then Mr. Armstrong goes on in this article to say, so there will have to be the temple there, probably in about 4.5 years, well, of course, that's what he said at the time, probably in 4.5 years, because he was way ahead of his time, as we can see from this article. But nevertheless, he goes on to say, and they will put there the abomination of which the statue of Jupiter Olympus, placed by Antiochus Epiphanes, was the type. I know of a statue in a great cathedral, which some think is the very same statue of Jupiter that Antiochus placed in the holy place. It could be that same statue. Others think this particular statue is the one Simon Magus had made of himself in the first century. But then, of course, there is a man of sin, the son of perdition, the supreme false prophet, professing that he actually will be God. That would certainly also be an abomination in the holy place. And finally, of course, the army surrounding Jerusalem is referred to in the Bible many times as an abomination. So there are different ways how the scripture can be fulfilled. But I wanted to point out here that we might be a lot further along in prophecy than we might have thought. Because if we still wait for a king of the south to arise, there might not have to be one. You see? Now let's go back to the book of Hosea, because I want to quickly show you who that beast is. Remember, there are 10 nations, or groups of nations, which will have to give their power for 1 hour to the beast. Now the beast is an individual, but the beast is also a system, a European system. And so the beast can very well refer to the leader of that system. And in Hosea chapter 5, he is referred to as the leader of the system, and he is identified, even by name, if you please. It says in Hosea 5 and verse 13, "When Ephraim, Great Britain, saw his sickness, Judah saw his wounds, then Ephraim went to Assyria and sent to King Jareb." But of course, he cannot cure you. King Jareb of Assyria is the end time figure identified in the Bible as the beast. There has never been a King Jareb in history of Assyria. Now, the word Jareb is interesting. The meaning is fighter, or it also can mean quarrelsome. In German, we have the word Strauss, which means fighter or quarrelsome. And that's why in the 60s and the 70s, we had assumed that perhaps Franz Josef Strauss might be the one, because the name would have perfectly fit. Now, he wasn't the one. There will be another one. Now, he may not be called Jareb or Strauss, you understand that, but it describes his character, how he is going to be viewed, what kind of a person he is. He's also referred, by the way, in chapter 10 and verse 6 of the book of Hosea. You can look at this later. But I want to quickly turn now to the book of Isaiah chapter 10 to point out what is going to happen to this King Jareb. And this shows that the final resurrection of the Roman Empire in Europe will be led by a Assyrian. Now, right now it's Germany and France. We don't know exactly what kind of a role France will play in the ultimate configuration. But we know from prophecy it's going to be ultimately in the hands of an Assyrian. And of course we know who the Assyrians are. They are the German and Austrian German-speaking peoples. Notice now Isaiah chapter 10 and verse 12, what is stated about this king of Assyria, this end-time king of Assyria. In Isaiah 10 and verse 12, we read, "Therefore it shall come to pass, when the Lord hath performed all his work on Mount Zion and on Jerusalem, that he will say, I will punish the fruit of the arrogant heart of the king of Assyria." So there is still going to be a king of Assyria around when God is going to start punishing the arrogant heart of that king. Notice in chapter 14 and verse 25, Isaiah 14 and verse 25. And this also shows where this Assyrian king is going to be at that time. Because God says in chapter 14 and verse 25 of the book of Isaiah, "I will break the Assyrian in my land." Remember where the king of the north is going to end up? In Palestine. That's where his headquarters is going to be. "So I will break the Assyrian in my land, and on my mountains tread them underfoot. And then his yoke shall be removed from them." The modern tribes of Israel and Judah, slavery is being referred to here, "and his burden removed from their shoulders." Also notice Isaiah chapter 30. And let's start reading in verse 30. Isaiah 30 and verse 30. "The Lord will cause his glorious voice to be heard and show the descent of his arm with the indignation of his anger and the flame of a devouring fire, with scattering tempest and hailstones." Verse 31 of Isaiah 30. "For through the voice of the Lord Assyria will be beaten down, and he strikes as he strikes with a rod. And in every place where the staff of punishment passes, which the Lord lays on him, it will be with tambourines and harps, and in battles of brandishing he will fight with it. For Tophet." Now Tophet is an interesting Hebrew word. It means a burning place or also a lake of fire. "For Tophet was established of old, yes, for the king it is prepared." Now we know that the beast is going to be thrown together with the false prophet into the lake of fire when Christ returns. Here we have exactly the same prophecy describing the same event. "For Tophet was established of old, yet for the king it is prepared. He has made it deep and large. Its pyre is fire with much wood, the breath of the Lord like a stream of brimstone kindles it. And of course, the lake of fire is called a lake of fire and brimstone. So we see again the same prophecy here, but let's go a step further in Isaiah chapter 31, verses 8 and 9. Isaiah 31 and at verse 8, again we read, "Then Assyria shall fall by a sword, not of man." Now remember, we read earlier in Daniel chapter 2 that there's going to be a stone coming down, not of man, or without hands. Of course, God is the one bringing about that situation. And here we find the same explanation again. Assyria shall fall by a sword not of man, because God is going to do it. Christ is going to do it. And a sword not of mankind shall devour him. And we read at the end of verse 9, "Whose fire is in Zion, and whose furnace is in Jerusalem." So we see these things are going to happen, and apparently they are going to happen soon, maybe even sooner than if a constitution had been adopted, because if it had been adopted, it wouldn't have come in force in full effect before 2008. Now, with certain European nations now going full stream ahead, we don't know what's going to happen, or how quickly it's going to happen, but we can most certainly focus on what is happening already in the Middle East. And maybe we don't have to look too much for a king of the south, because that might already have taken place. So let's keep watching. It's an exciting time we are living. And I believe personally we're living in historical times right now as these things are developing over there in Europe, something which has never ever happened before in the history of mankind, if you think about it. It's the 10th and last resurrection of the Roman Empire, and we know when that is in full force and effect, Christ is going to return.